If you guys, I know we're going to pass around the offering, so that will be coming as I introduce this, so the baskets will be going. And I know those kind of things, when you give of your time and your talents, but also your finances, God does cool stuff with them. So, the prayer was, my name is Tom. I am director of Camp Carl, but my favorite title is I am husband to an amazing lady. Her name is Michelle. And I have known Michelle since second grade. We actually lived right down the street, and I dated her through high school and college, and really she was the only person I dated, and it was awesome. We have three amazing kids that I like this other title. They call me Dad, so it's really cool. Katie is a sophomore at Kent State. And then I have two boys in high school at CBCA, a junior and a freshman, Cole and Jackson Sullivan. And if they were in here, you would think they're really awesome kids, because they are. And you would love them. I'm just going to give you a little glimpse of who I am, because the advice that I got from my two boys this morning was, Dad, just be authentic and just be honest with who you are and who you were, and see how it goes. And so I'm going to do that. So as I exposed the crazy life that I lived in high school, you're allowed to laugh. You're allowed to go, yep, that sounds like me too. But I did go to Lake High School. Any Lake High School? My family moved from Ellet. Both my parents went to Ellet. They moved and we built a home. If you guys know where Clearwater is, we're almost like right across the street is where I grew up. I know, it's a cool place. And it was funny because we came here, I was in second grade when we just got here. And I remember my first week of school, we were in the gym room and I heard these two adults talking to each other, to the gym teacher, and maybe it was the teacher, and they were calling each other by name. And I heard that the gym teacher's name was George. And so I remember going up to him. I'm in second grade. I don't know what I was. I was probably cocky and who knows. But I go, hey, George, how are you? Bad move. Okay, so he looks at me. He says, my name is not George. My name is, I can't even remember his last name. He said, Mr. Wilson. I'm like, well, and I was embarrassed, but I knew I was kind of caught, and I said, I just pulled out a lie. And I said, well, the school I came from, we called everyone by name, first name. And he looked at me like, you idiots, you don't, come on. And sure enough, I kept going on with this lie, and they actually had to call my old school. It was so embarrassing. I'm in their office, and they come out and said, you're busted. And back then, when you got busted, there was like a wooden thing that hung on the wall that they took off. And sure enough, in second grade, I got that. So that was kind of an embarrassing moment, but I was like, okay, I'm going to keep going. As I grew older, I'm going to just give you this one more thing, and we're going to laugh, but it was not laughable then. It was a tragedy. But anyway, so I'm in fifth grade. Now, I am not the world's greatest reader. And I was called out in fifth grade to read from this projection video or something, like a slideshow. And as I'm reading about baby larvae. Okay, you might think baby larvae. But I'm in fifth grade, okay? All my dudes around me were just like, they can't wait to hear me read, because I'm stuttering, I'm nervous, and I'm turning red. And I read the baby larva's name is pupa, but I pronounce it as poopa, okay? So when you're in fifth grade, that is the funniest thing in the world, okay? And I'm just cracking up laughing. All the dudes around me, we're all laughing our heads off. And our teacher was so ticked, Mrs. Kaufman. She goes, Mr. Sullivan, out in the hallway. I'm like, I didn't, you know, and I'm laughing with them because I felt like, okay, I'll just laugh like I meant to do that. And I didn't mean to do that. I just wasn't a good reader. So I go out in the hallway, and sure enough, I see this other design wood piece with holes in it this time. And sure enough, I get out in the hallway, and she brings another teacher out, and she is a big lady. And she's a little bit older, and I could tell she was getting so mad. And I had to bend over again and in the hallway, and then it wasn't just me, it was some of the dudes. So I was like, well, at least I'm doing this with them. And and so we're there, and man, sure enough, I mean, she was just going at it. I could tell she was just mad, and I'm like, oh, I'm a bad reader, I didn't know. All right, just hold tight, put your seatbelt on. So the next day, she comes in. She was so ticked at us. She collapsed in class, and I'm not kidding you. I had to run to the office, and she died of a heart attack. I caused that heart attack, okay? So I'm living, like, in fifth grade, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, I just killed a teacher, okay? So I know, that's right, this story is crazy. And I'm responsible for, potentially, because of my reading. So I've been in therapy for 45 years trying to figure this all out. I mean, this has been like, oh, my gosh. A fifth grader, I didn't see the gravity of what just happened, but she was older, and I could tell she just, it just got to her. But anyway, so again, my mask is coming off. This is a kind of a part of me. I was a little, my mom would call me a stinker, right? But I think I just had a little bit in me. My summers were at Clearwater Park. I would be there at 10 in the morning, and I would leave at 10 at night. Every summer, I would be there, and I would work around Clearwater just to get food. So I would do trash. I would sweep out the pavilions that they had in the back just to get some food. And there was a place right across from Clearwater. It is the Bechter's place. They had a barn there, and they had a trampoline in it. Spent tons of time there. And as I was growing through high school, anyone here live in Congress Lake? No? No Congress Lakers? Okay. Well, Congress Lake was like, oh, yeah, there you go. But you know Congress Lake. We had some great friends there. And my high school life was spending weekends there. And my friends knew that I was a believer. So I was raised in a home, a dad who was an alcoholic and then changed his life completely. And I saw God transform him at age 6. But as I was growing older, I knew I just wanted to stay away from alcohol. But all the my friends that I hung out with, it was like that was the scene. The scene was go to parties at Congress Lake with John Finucane at his house or Molly Shantz or, yeah, you guys might know some of these. These are like, your parents are my friends here, okay? Sid Hitchcock. So they would all have times at their place, and we would go to this place, and we would just have parties. Now, I didn't drink because I was so worried. I saw my dad being an alcoholic. I'm like, I will probably love this stuff. I'm not going to test it. I'm not going to taste it. So I stayed away from it, but I was like the designated driver. My friends and group, they would just get hammered at Congress Lake, and I would be the guy that would drive them home. And, you know, there was a part of me inside of me that was trying to be really cool Jesus guy and, you know, witness to them as they're throwing up, and that didn't work too well. But, you know, I kind of drove them home. But I think as I just kept growing up, I just was looking for more and more. Now, I was an athlete also at Lake. I was average at football. I played football there, and I was average at basketball. I played basketball there. I was pretty decent at baseball. I got some college scholarship stuff for baseball. And, you know, I thought I was it. I thought, man, once I made that team or once I made that All-Star County or what, you know, I just felt like, okay, this is the more that I'm looking for. And I could tell as I was growing up, I just sensed there was more. I didn't really understand it. I knew there was something in me. There was something in the design that God has created that I was just looking for the next best thing. Now, if any of your parents would have known me in high school, they would say, Tom knew everyone. And my goal, partially sinful, partially I think that was God living in me, I had so many friends. I did not have enemies. I had friends that were in the band. I had friends that were not in the band. I had friends with the athletes, with the really smart people. Everyone I just liked. Now, it's probably because I love to be liked. How many of you are in here, right? that are like that way, that you'll do about anything to be liked. And so I had tons of friends, and they voted me best personality. How lame is that? I mean, it's just like, it's so goofy, but that was like the senior superlative. Do they still do that? Please tell me no. Oh, that is like terrible. Like they would say, best eyes. I'm like, are you serious? We still do that? Best smile. I mean, it was just weird. Anyway, but as I'm still searching for more, I just sense that there's God's telling me something, and I kind of kept trying to lean into it and not sure. And some of you might be here too, going, you know what, I come to this youth group on Sundays. Maybe this is your first time here. Maybe you've been here a couple times going, I feel like there's more. I don't know what it is. I feel like I come here and I meet some friends and, you know, I dress up in some cool clothes and you know, maybe I had a conversation with so-and-so and you go home and you go, that was good, but maybe there's more. And I think I'm 49 now. Wow, that's old. I remember thinking when I was 18, I was like, 50 years old. Those are old, old people. I'm here now. It's awesome. I love it. But as we're thinking and as I kept going through life, and maybe you have too. Maybe you've got to a point where you're just like, okay, I got on that team. And you're like, well, that was good for a little bit. Or, man, I made friends with this person. Oh, that was good for a little bit. I came out of high school. I didn't study a lick. I never took a book home. My grade point average was 2.65, and I thought, phew, I made it, right? I applied to Ohio State. Now, Ohio State back then, if you had breath and a heartbeat, you got in. So my ACT score, go ahead and laugh, it was 19, okay? It was terrible. But I got into Ohio State with a 19, woohoo! And I decided, because I didn't know what else to do, I was the first Sullivan ever to go to college. I love science and math. It was just my thing. I loved it. English, terrible, right? Couldn't read, killed people, right? But I went to Ohio State, and I decided to pick engineering, thinking, let's go for it, right? Let's just do it. And as I was going there, I'm thinking, wow, studying. I never did this before. Oh, no. How do you do it? How do you manage your time? What do you do? And so I'm at college literally staying up till 2 in the morning because I just didn't know how to study. But I kept grinding. I was thinking, I'm the first Sullivan. My dad wanted me to go in the Army because he's like, you are definitely not going to succeed at college. Now, he didn't say that, okay? My dad's a great man. But he did recommend, he did put, you know, like the Army brochure in front of me and said, what do you think of this? And I said, no, Dad, I think I could do college. So after a year, my freshman year, I got on the dean's list at Ohio State. And so funny, their counselors brought me in, thought, how is this working? They saw my ACT score. They knew what I got in high school. They're like, so tell us, whether they thought I was cheating, I have no idea. But they sat me in their office like, tell me, how did you do this? And I said, well, I just studied like crazy. And I, you know, and I was a study nerd in college. I mean, I would get up at probably 6, study for an hour, go to classes 8 to noon, go play basketball. And then probably about from maybe 4 in the afternoon till 2 in the morning, I studied. And I grinded it out, and I graduated with a 3.4 in engineering, and I designed toys for the last 21 years of my life. I worked at a company called Little Tykes, and I've designed toys. You guys all probably, you might have played with or rode on or climbed on some of the toys that I designed. And but I say that to say that you would think I ended up a toy designer, okay? Like my job was bringing home toys and playing with them with my kids. My job was to go sit in your room and sketch up ideas of what would be the next greatest toy that would sell on Christmas. That was my job. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Big. All the adults have, probably in here, with Tom Hanks. He's a toy designer. It was like the ideal job. And I kept leaning into it like, is this it? Have I arrived? Is this the more, God, that you've kind of designed in me? Is this it? And I learned that it wasn't it. It was good. But what I'm learning more and more as I get older, there's gift in getting older besides your metabolism goes south and you can't sleep and you got to wake up like four times to go to the bathroom. That's terrible. Thank you, adult people, for laughing with me. But I know there's something more. And what I want to share with you guys, too, I think there's more. And I think there's a lot more. I think God designed us for so much more, but sometimes we look in the wrong places. And I think, too, that we're all gifted. And yeah, this is Christmas season, and we're thinking of, yeah, I love getting gifts. You guys like getting gifts? Of course. Who doesn't like getting a gift? But I think God kind of leans into us and says, I want to tell you, I have the greatest gift. And I don't even know if you even know, but you have it. If you're in this room and you say, yes, I've made a decision to say, I want to follow Jesus. Yes, I've made a decision where I want to give him my life and I want to live my life according to what he has for me. If that's you and you say, yes, you believe 2,000 years ago that there was a God that sent his son to die for our sins, that conquered death and conquered sin and rose himself from 3 days later. If you believe that, you're gifted. And I say this because of this amazing thing. If you guys have a Bible, you guys can start to turn to Galatians chapter 5. And before I get there, as I'm looking for more and as I'm trying to figure out, God, I always was looking for more, but it always felt like there was less. You guys ever felt that way where you just start getting stuff and you start getting things, you accumulate a lot of cool shoes, you're thinking, man, if I could just get one more pair, then you'll feel like it, and you don't. You feel like the more I'm getting, the less I get. And I'm thinking that as I'm growing up, as I'm getting really neat things handed to me, and I was had this amazing job, this amazing family, this wife that was awesome. But it's still, there was something there that was missing. But what I want to go through is this amazing verse. This is Paul writing to the Galatians. This is just when the church was starting to just blow up. This is when people, Gentiles, were like, I believe in that story of Jesus. And I want to follow who this Jesus is. Now, Paul already met with the Galatians and these churches around that area and was telling them who Christ was and that there was a new way. There once was an old way of living, rules and ways that you had to do certain things. But when Jesus came, completely new. There was new ways that you could do things and new things. And Paul's like, there's a gift. There's a treasure that's waiting for all of you. You got to be here. But yet they were being pulled back into this direction. Like, you got to do a lot of stuff. You got to be a certain way. You got to get a certain GPA. You got to get a certain job. You got to have certain friends. You got to look a certain way. Paul's like, no, 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 no. There's more. So go to verse 22 and 23. Here's the more. Here's the stuff that sets us free. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Dudes, self-control, right? This is the treasure. Now, as I'm growing up, I oftentimes pray, I'm like, God, okay, you say the Spirit lives in me, right? And this is the, these are the, this is the fruit of the Spirit that lives in me. This, these are all these attributes that I'm looking at going, oh, that's the treasure. I would love to have those. Okay, God, I'm going to go to bed. When I wake up, I'm ready. Give them to me. When I have a situation, give me great joy as I enter into that situation. God, give me amazing patience when that person is so flipping annoying, right? God, show me how to love my wife, my kids, my close, dear friends. And what I'm learning is that it doesn't happen overnight, that it takes time. And what I'm learning is that it takes action. Now, this is something, this is a sentence that I hope for you, and I hope for me, that you would start to do these things, that you would start to have a courageous act of obedience that will cost you something. When you start taking your faith and put it into action, then you start to tap into that treasure that's in you a little bit more. Again, I wanted the quick fix. I'm just like, God, come on, let me just pray. He's in me. I'm going to wake up, and I'm going to have all these. And God's like, it's a journey, Tom. Just go along with me, but I need you to move. I need you to start acting. I need you to start doing things. And I'm not kidding you. As I'm thinking about you and praying for you this week, and as I'm thinking about what would you say to a group of high school kids, God, God's just putting this over and over again in my own life, like, Tom, I want to show you more. I want to give you more, but you need to move, and you need to act in ways that are going to cost you, and it's hard. I'm driving here this morning thinking I'm going to probably get here a little early, make sure the slides work, meet some people, kind of hang and chill. And as I'm coming right off of Route 77 South, I live up in the falls, and I'm driving down. I get off the exit, and I see this car spun out in the that little ramp. I don't know if you know the, what is it, Maslin Road exit, the 619 exit right there. There's a big ditch, and I saw this car must have swerved. And I'm driving in this big camp van, and I'm thinking about the talk, thinking about praying. And I'm driving, and I look over, and there's an old woman in there, and I could tell she's 80 plus years old, and she's in this van or in this car, and I'm in the van, and I drive past, and it is like God was just going, okay, courageous act of obedience, Tom, this is it. And I'm thinking in my head quickly, oh, this is going to cost me, because if you've ever stopped with somebody in a situation like that, you could be in for the long haul, right? This might have been an all-day thing. I might have called Ryan and said, Ryan, I'm out. I got to help. God wants me to do this. So I get pulled up the van. I put it in reverse after I drove by, and I pulled it in reverse, and I get out, and this woman's shaking as she's sitting in her car. And I walk down in mud. I got some cool shoes, and I had mud. But God was like, go, Tom, come on. I get down there. I'm like, ma'am, are you okay? And I could tell she was embarrassed. And she's like, I'm fine. Everything's good. And I'm like, are you sure? I mean, there was like, if you guys see him, you'll see there's marks all over the place. And she barely missed a light. And I get there, and I'm like, can I help you? Are you okay? And can I call, 911? Or should I get this? What do you need? And she's like, I think I'm okay. And my car, I just need to get it towed now. But I need to make it to church. I have donuts. And so I said, okay, well, I am too going to church. What church do you go to? And she goes, well, I go to that church right off of Rayburn Road. It's called the Chapel. And so I'm thinking, wow, God, what are you doing here? So I go down and I introduce myself of who I am. She goes, I know you. And I go, wow, what's your name? And she goes, my name's Betty Farr. And I said, Betty, can I get you to church? She's just like, that would be wonderful because I got to get my donuts to my class. So she's all dressed up, and we're walking through, I mean, this much mud, and she's just stomping through, and she's holding on, and she's just talking like nothing happened. She did like 4 360s, okay? And I walked her up to the camp van, and there's cars driving by. I'm like, oh, God, please, she's going to die right here again. I'm going to be in therapy. I don't know. So I got her in the car, and I drove her here, and I dropped off her, you know, her in the front door and walked her in, and she had her donuts, and she's telling her story to her friends, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, what just happened? So she gave me her AAA card, and I called them, and I might be getting a call while I'm up here of them trying to tow this car out, but they're going to bring it here. Anyway, I say all that. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if that was truly God or if it was just a coincidence, but I'm leaning in going, that's God calling me to something more, calling me to really be opening up areas in my life that I just don't even know about. Teaching me what it means to be kind and to sacrifice love. And so as I'm thinking, what would you tell high schoolers? I just want to lean into you guys and say there is so much more. But it's going to take action. It's going to take faith. This is the definition of faith that I just love to land on. Faith is acting on what you believe. I'd probably say most of you in here say, yes, I'm following Jesus. I might have grew up in a Christian home, and yeah, I come to these, and I hear things, and I believe in the Christmas story and the Easter story. I'm there. But I think God wants to show you so much more. So much more. But he's asking you to show some faith. Show some action. And I'm convinced when with our faith and our action and his faithfulness collide, man, things happen. Growth happens. You start to see things that you've never seen before. All of a sudden, you're in a conversation with somebody and you say something kind and nice and you're like, where did that come from? Or you're just like, your mom and dad are driving you nuts and you go, hey, I'm going to do the dishes. And you're like, oh, where'd that come from? Right? That's God changing you because you're taking simple acts of obedience, courageous acts of obedience, and he's opening more and more of who he is because he's gifted you to go do things. Now, yeah, I am the I'm the camp director, and I love having some of you come out to camp and serve. Of course, I'm looking for some of you seniors. If you want to come and give your life away and really lean into something that will cost you, that maybe come and apply to Camp Carl. See what it's like. But it will cost you because it's hard. There are long days, physically, emotionally, spiritually. You are giving of yourselves sacrificially. But I'm telling you, he will start to open up the more. You will start seeing things that you've never seen before and experienced before. Also, there's opportunities for you guys to even come and be on what we call the crew. So freshman, sophomore, junior, if that's you, a crew is just going, okay, I'm going to take my week and just serve. I'm going to be in the background. I'm going to be working when other people might be playing. I'm going to lean into what I think is right and help a ministry further the kingdom, but I'm not going to try to get recognition. I'm going to be helping with luggage. I'm going to be sweeping up floors. It's hard. It takes a courageous act to say, God, I'm going to have faith, and I know you're faithful. Let the magic happen. Let that Jesus stuff work. Show me more of who you are because you say there's more. And he does those things. This verse up here, I love it because I think it's a ringing in my heart, in my life. If you cling to your life, you'll lose it. If you just stick into everything that's important to you and it's all about you, you're going to lose it. But if you give up your life for me, you're going to find it. When God starts pushing you to the world of other people, right? The great commandment is what? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and go love others like you love yourself too. A lot of you in here don't love yourself. You should be thinking of how God views you and love yourself that same way. But he's really calling you to the world of other people. I'm going to end with just this just a story. It's like a metaphor. But I think, I don't know who in here doesn't want to be this. Doesn't want to be authentic. Doesn't want to really, truly be a deep person. And I don't think you get that way by just staying in your own little box and thinking of your own little things and thinking, like, I'm telling you, when I was your age, this was important to me. I needed you to think that I looked good. I needed you to think I was a good athlete. I needed you to think certain things about me. But I want to talk to you about a metaphor. Have any of you ever been to Stan Hewitt? Stan Hewitt, yep. Now, Stan Hewitt, for me, it bugs me. So you go to Stan Hewitt, and this place is audacious. It's big. I know it's beautiful, but the cyberlings who built this back in the early 19th century, it's just too big in a way. So I went there with some friends, and we paid our $30 or whatever it was, and we're walking through, and you're seeing different rooms, and, you know, the friends that we went with were like, ooh, ah, that's nice, ooh, you know, and I'm like, this is really bugging me. And I, in a way, I had to pull myself aside, and I had to say, Tom, just relax. Stop trying to think of why these designs or why this room is too big and waste of money. Stop thinking. You don't need to vacuum it, so don't worry. Right? But it bugged me on a metaphorical level. Because when I see something that big, I just think it's too hard to fill. But God has been reminding me over and over again that that's how he designed us. That's how he's designed our hearts. That it's so big. There's so much more that he wants to show us. There's so much more that he wants to fill in that. But man, I look at those rooms sometimes and I'm thinking, can you imagine living in a house that big? You're coming downstairs in your robe with your cornflakes and you're eating them. Like, you know, it's like there's no one around. Your kid, one kid's over there, one kid's in this room, and you don't see each other. It seems really lonely, you know, and add to insult, you're sitting down at a table that's probably seating 400 people and you're there with your cornflakes, you know. Like, how lonely is that? But again, I think God has designed our hearts that big where he wants us to explore different rooms. And he wants us to all of a sudden just stop and go, see this room in here? This is called patience. I want to show you how wonderful this is. And he does. But not without an act, not without me moving in a certain direction. The same thing, I think he wants to, have you ever seen the Beauty and the Beast, where she walks into the library, right? And she sees all these books and she's like, this is spectacular. Where I would have walked in a room like that at Stan Hewitt and said, this is stupid, right? But no, God's saying, Tom, there's more. I want to show you the magnificence of this. You're designed to have all this more. Your heart is designed to really get you to lean into who I am, because I'm the one that's going to satisfy you. So, what do you do with that today? How do you leave here and say, God, I've been feeling that nudge, and I know you all know that nudge, because we've all had that nudge. I felt a nudge today driving. You might have that nudge when your brother or sister needs help. And you just like, oh, are you serious, God? Like, I got to help them right now. But that's a nudge that God is saying, I want to show you more. Lean into that. Or it might be, man, Tim talks about this way to serve in the church. Maybe the kids department needs more help. And they know that you would be perfect for it. And you felt that nudge and you're like, slobber, ooh, smelly diapers, I don't know, God. But that's his nudge. He's like, I want to show you more. Just be obedient. It's going to cost you. But go. I want to show you something. I want to show you this room. It's going to look beautiful. Don't isolate yourself in a room and lock all the doors and close off the windows, because that's what your life will be. It will be lonely. Where he's saying, let me show you more. Maybe it's, okay, Tom talked about Camp Carl. Maybe it's something I want to help the chapel and that ministry, and I'm gonna step out. But I have all these fun things that I want to do this summer, but okay, I'm going to do that. Or okay, this crew thing or Wrangler and training, these things that I could kind of lean into camp a little bit and serve, give of myself for a week. Yeah, maybe I want to do that. God, that's your nudge, not just pizza I just ate, right? So lean into that. Start acting on those things. Have faith in what you believe is true. And let God start to show you amazing stuff. And he will. He'll open it up for you. It's awesome. So let me pray for us. God, you are so good. You are love. You are joy. You are peaceful. You're so patient with us. You're so kind. You're good. You're gentle. You're faithful. You have so much self-control, because if I were you, I would just be done with us. So thank you. Thank you for wanting us to see more. Thank you for designing in us the desire for more. And I pray that you would allow the loneliness, the emptiness, to drive us towards you, to drive us towards the more. And Lord, you live in us. Help us to understand how to believe that, how to tap into that, and how to say, God, show us more of you. I pray that you would nudge us all this afternoon, whether we're watching the Browns game or going outside and seeing sun, whatever it would be, Father, in our time with our family and friends, and maybe even doing homework and getting ready for Monday, I pray that you would nudge us. Prompt us to just have that courageous act that will cost us something, Father, but you promise us that you're going to grow us and that you're going to transform us. So thank you. Thanks for this group. Pray that you would continue to love them, continue to grow them up. Yeah, you're just a good God. And we all said together, amen.